This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
The following feature is paid and presented by the Department for Business and Trade. Welcome to the United Kingdom, where the brightest tech innovators reshaping our world are celebrated. This year, the Department for Business and Trade are spotlighting global, trailblazing entrepreneurs through the Unicorn Kingdom Pathfinder Awards. The winner of the Connected and Automated Mobility Technology category was Batobo. Hear from the co-founder, Sanjay Gulgan.
The main idea in the warehouses to move your products as quickly as possible and accurately. We are trying to optimize operations. Robots actually walking around the warehouses. They can run three shifts, so they can run 24/7. And also we have a chance to meet the demand for the rapid growth in trading. I'm excited to grow the Batobo in the UK. We can access any institutions and technical resources. We can apply more patents here, which is very critical for the valuation, for the future existence. It's easy to expand your business here and set up a company here. So this is a very big advantage. This is a very good opportunity in the UK. Whatever you touch, you see some opportunity and benefits here.
From cutting-edge AI to digital trade solutions, these innovators are building tomorrow's world today. Learn how the United Kingdom supports tech pioneers at great.gov.uk/UKPA.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report on the BBC World Service. Will Bain with you today. Thanks for being back with us. Coming up on the programme, as President Trump rattles businesses in the green energy sector, we hear how they're responding and how some countries and companies are already forging ahead with new relationships.
We know that there will be countless companies that will move and will open their location or new businesses in the region. You know, Debrecen has never come across this kind of boom. It's like playing in the Champions League.
Yeah, we'll be live in Hungary shortly to hear about one such tie-up with the Chinese giant BYD. Also on the programme today, just why is Japan raising its cost of borrowing to a 17-year high and how might it impact businesses and customers there? And we hear from the business exec who went from PE teacher in Wales to launching the Xbox 360 for Microsoft.
There's an expression we use here in Silicon Valley, you fake it till you make it. If there's one thing I can do, I think, is absorb osmotically a lot of information and then regurgitate that out as if I've lived it for 20 years.
Yes, more from Peter Moore on his career in sportswear, gaming and running one of the biggest football clubs on the planet. All before we leave you here today on World Business Report. We're equally busy throughout the programme, though, because we're going to kick off on what's been a crazy week, hasn't it, for financial markets. Perhaps none more so than for stocks and shares listed in companies that work around, I guess you could broadly say, the green energy transition. Everything from firms making electric cars to wind turbines and solar panels, for example, have been digesting what could be a pretty seismic shift in not just policy, but financial investment as well, as a result of a shift in focus by the incoming Trump administration in the US. Here, for example, is a flavour of the president's views on wind turbines.
They litter our country. They're littered all over our country, like dropping paper, like dropping garbage in a field. And that's what happens to them, because in a period of time, they turn to garbage. Most expensive energy ever. They only work if you get subsidy. The only people that want them are the people that are getting rich off windmills, getting massive subsidies from the U.S. government. And it's the most expensive energy there is. It's many, many times more expensive than clean natural gas. So we're going to try and have a policy where no windmills are being built.
Well, already this week, the president has backed those words up with actions, freezing $300 billion worth of clean energy loans, for example, that had been part of the Biden administration's Inflation Reduction Act, due to go to things like wind manufacturers, but also things like battery technology for electric cars, something we'll come to in a moment or two. Already having an impact far beyond the US's borders as well, though, on company shares, as we were saying, right around the world. And Shanti Kellerman, our financial markets watcher, every Friday here on World Business Report, the chief investment officer at the investment firm M&G Wealth, is back with us. Shanti, always great to have you back on the programme. Thanks for being with us. Been a bit of a bouncy week for those kind of stocks and shares in particular, and particularly kind of non-US ones, actually, as well.
Yeah, because a lot of the companies that are out of the US, they will have loads of business in America. The shares in renewable energy companies were down about 25% last year. But not all of that was Trump. Some of it is just the fact that they've bid to build big projects. Their costs have gone up, and sometimes those projects just become non-viable with the amount you have to pay to build them. So partly Trump, but not completely. The big impact would be if tax credits go, but that hasn't happened yet.
And what about the kind of direction of travel, full stop, I suppose, as well? Because the president, on the flip side, has been talking about a real big boost in terms of fossil fuel energy, unleashing fossil fuel energy, gas, oil, all that kind of stuff across North America as well. Have we seen that reflected at all yet in terms of commodity markets?
Oil prices have come up a little bit recently, but that's more linked to demand in China. I think the big contradiction in what he's proposing is he's saying he wants cheap energy, but then he wants lots of it. And the amount of drilling and investment companies do will be based on what they're going to make. So higher oil prices would lead to more drilling. Lower prices are not going to entice companies.
Yeah, absolutely. We had a fracking company speaking about shale gas to that end as well, saying drill, baby, drill might actually not be great business news for us necessarily. Yeah, interesting thoughts. So let's broaden them out. Andy Brown is with us. Andy's a longtime energy industry exec, now the president of the Energy Institute, professional organization for engineers and other professionals in the global energy sector. Andy, always great to have you back on the program as well. Welcome back to World Business Report.
Thanks, Will.
Has it felt like a challenging week, a shift in direction, or were people in the sector kind of braced for what was clearly going to be a change in direction in terms of policy and investment in the world's biggest economy?
Yeah, I think we knew which direction it was going to take. Clearly, to see what kind of form he will take executive orders is always interesting. But it is as anticipated, I think.
Let's talk about one in particular, wind, because that seems to be the one where we talked about it earlier in the week, shares in some of the biggest companies, the biggest manufacturers of wind turbines. And we heard that clip there in sort of kind of now almost textbook President Trump form, wasn't it? How damaging, though, is that type of language in terms of investment sentiment beyond the borders of the US, do you think?
I think, well, for manufacturers, it's a bit of an issue. The US was a big market for wind turbines, particularly onshore. The offshore is a very small sector compared to the onshore. Clearly, there's a lot of more activity around the world. I mean, a lot of activity in Europe. Actually, most activity is in China, which is growing its renewables much faster than anyone else in the world.
I was going to say, what does it mean in terms of focus for some of these companies? Because clearly, just in pure volume numbers, right? The number of people and the number of projects and the amount of money that might be available in a country the size of the United States does then help boost the order book, doesn't it? The finances of these companies to be able to bring prices down, all that kind of stuff that we want if we want this transition to happen quickly.
Well, it's all about pace of growth. You know, I mean, renewables grew 60% under the last Trump government, so it will continue to grow. And let's say last year, $3 trillion investment in energy, and $2 trillion in new energies, including the electrical sector. So it's an unstoppable kind of journey we're on, but it's just the pace. And the pace in the biggest economy is going to slow somewhat. The pace of acceleration is going to slow somewhat.
We talked about,
it's going to continue, I think, going fast in the rest of the world.
Batteries is another really interesting area, isn't it? We've chatted to you on the program about it before. We were talking a lot just before Christmas about the failure of the Swedish and European kind of battery hope, Northvolt. Do individual areas, so for example, Europe, Africa, need their own battery champions, do you think? Or can they rely on Asia and North America?
Well, we rely on, you know, things like lithium hydroxide. We rely on China almost entirely now. So we do rely on China. it's good to get manufacturing into Europe. And Hungary has been a great example of attracting a lot of Chinese and Korean battery manufacturers to build gigafactories there. So we should learn from that experience.
Yeah, well, we'll cross there and see exactly what they're doing in just a moment. But just do a bit of crystal ball gazing for us, first of all, Andy Binner. As I kind of said, sort of a slightly buffeting start to the year for the green energy sector. Look ahead to the rest of the year. Does it calm down and that investment picture become a bit calm? Because clearly that investment, you know, for projects of the size that these companies invest in, they do need a kind of stable outlook and stable policy outlook.
Yeah, I mean, and I think as the previous speaker said, look, what hit the renewable companies hasn't just been Trump. It's been the cost of inflation, but also a high cost of capital. And that has actually meant the renewable companies have struggled more in the last couple of years than they did, let's say, 4 or 5 years ago. I think the biggest, just one point I'll tell you, the biggest issue that I think the green movement faces is now Trump, the largest economy, stepping out of the Paris Climate Accord gives a lot of other countries an excuse not to do what they need to do.
Yeah, and we will see whether they stick to some of those mandates, whether they can be persuaded, and whether others step up to take that kind of leadership role in that space as well. Really interesting, and I'm sure we'll get Andy Brown's thoughts on it again as we go forward. Andy Brown there, the president of the Energy Institute. Well, as Andy mentioned, investment, growth, changing your focus, trying to attract other players, non-American players, even if they're not homegrown ones, has been a focus for some other countries. Hungary, in particular, has been working closely with some of the biggest firms in China in terms of the EV transition and that electric battery manufacturing and storage. And Jordan Dunbar from the BBC's Climate Questions is live out in Hungary at the moment in the home of the battery boom. Jordan, tell everybody exactly where you are at the moment.
So one of the reasons why Seattle chose this location, that not only the...
Sorry, well, we jumped a little bit ahead of ourselves there, didn't we? And heard a little bit about the Chinese battery maker CATL and why it picked Hungary. But Jordan, why don't you tell us where in Hungary you are and why you are there and what you and the team at the Climate Question have been looking at? Struggling a little bit, I think, to get Jordan Dunbar's line there. So why don't we hear a little bit from CETL? This is Nomi Shidlow at their brand new plant in the city of Debrecen in central Hungary, talking a little bit about why they chose to be there.
We know that there will be countless companies that will move and will open their location or new businesses in the region. You know, Debrecen has never come across this kind of boom. It's like playing in the Champions League.
Yeah, the giant plant was a 7 billion euro investment and could up to 9,000 workers in a few years. Hungary's rolled out the red carpet for business with tax incentives, readily available land and cooperative labour movements, and surrounded by investment from all parts of different bits of Asia. You heard there, actually, not CATL, but a local business owner, just about the impact, and we heard it in the headlines as well, about what some of that business was doing already to the local area. We're clearly struggling a tiny bit with the line there to Jordan Dunbar. So why don't we just return to Shanti Kellerman momentarily from MG Wealth here in London as well. And Shanti, that's a fascinating kind of tie-up, isn't it? This relationship Europe's got with clearly the biggest player in all of this, as Andy Brown was saying, the China-Chinese companies like BYD in the EV space, CATL in the battery space.
Yeah, and China's an area where they are world leaders in the technology. They have a huge amount of scale, which is very important in that area to get the cost down. But then as they're trying, you know, for example, they don't want tariffs and things, which is talked about a lot. You're seeing them do more where they're producing batteries in other countries, setting up factories there. Then you've got a stake in the local jobs, and governments are kind of inclined to be more friendly. So it's all intertwined in that geopolitical calculus.
Yeah, that feels like one of the kind of ways forward, one of those sort of compromises that perhaps Andy Brown was talking about, rather than turning in completely in terms of protectionism, partnerships in some way.
Yeah, and they'll look at countries where, you know, there's a skilled labor force, there's factories available, they'll probably make governments compete against each other in terms of how much subsidies they're willing to offer. So you do see companies, you know, extract what they can to get those benefits. And then if, you know, if BYD wants to produce cars for sale in Europe, it's closer to their supply chain here. It makes it easier to do assembly.
Well, let's hear a bit more about what they're doing in Hungary now. And I believe we've re-established the line to Jordan Dunbar in Hungary. Jordan, sorry about the gremlins there. Sounds
no
a really
problem.
Interesting program. Tell us a little bit about what you guys have been looking at there in Hungary.
Well, for the climate question, we often talk about the green transition and fighting climate change with these solutions, but we wanted to get on the ground to see what that actually means for everyday people and business. So I'm in Budapest at the cusp of a wave of massive investment, 20 billion euros and 25,000 jobs in battery and electric vehicle makers here. It's a sector the EU says is critical to its climate plans and economic future. So for a country of 10 million people to become reportedly the third biggest manufacturer of batteries in the world is pretty incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And we heard some of, we jumped the gun a little bit in terms of playing the clip from some of the local reaction there, but seems like having a big impact on local economies already, right?
Absolutely. So I've just come back from Debrecen, that's Hungary's second city. It's about 220,000 people, so it's pretty small. And my brand new hotel was full of German, South Korean and Chinese business people, because it's that mix that Hungary's been using to draw in all this money. It sees itself as a meeting point for East and West within the EU. As you mentioned, some places in the EU, other countries are worried about welcoming in Chinese battery makers and Chinese vehicle makers, but Hungary isn't. Hungary very much says we need them. They're so far ahead in the technology. So they've really welcomed them with open arms, including CATL, which is the world's largest battery maker.
Yeah, we heard great analogy comparing it to sort of football's Champions League to the Hungarian League when it comes to the volume of investment as well. And I understand you, you've been sitting down with some other local businesses as well, right?
Yeah, so it's a tale of two pubs, really, in Debrecen. So you heard there, we went and had some fancy Tokaj Hungarian wine with some local business owners, and that was Zoltz Milenka. He owns an electronic IT business. He's delighted, like he says, they're in the Champions League now, and there's plenty of opportunities. But on the other side of the city, we went to quite a well-known opposition and protest pub and community space and had a beer with Mate Gali and Mihai Donby, who opposed the plans.
So one of the problems is about jobs, because most of the jobs are filled by foreign workers who move here.
Yeah, take a look at the housing prices. All the youngsters are absolutely out of hope of getting their own homes in the next 20 years.
The government, if it was truly important, the future of Hungary, it could help its young people by building them homes.
Always a good place to find sensible people, I think, Jordan, isn't it, in the pub? People with the bluntest takes on business and economics, having done
Absolutely.
This program for a long time too. What about them? I know you heard kind of the top of the program there as well. We were talking with Shanti and Andy Brown about Trump and what it means. I guess that's factored loads into your climate questions minds, as you guys are all kind of looking at what it means for kind of climate policy more broadly. What's your early take on what the impact might be?
Well, certainly in Hungary, everyone we spoke to was checking their phones for the news to see what tariffs and so on were coming out. But for them, they all said that tariffs won't affect them directly. They're not going to be on Hungary. But if President Trump's plans for America First, if that causes the EU economy to shrink, and particularly Germany, people will have less money. And that's really going to slow down the EV market, which we've already seen. That will dry up the investment heading to these Hungarian factories. We just spoke with the Minister for the National Economy, Martin Nagy, and he said he thinks the EU needs to promote electric vehicle industry, more money for chargers, more money for subsidies to really help European-built EVs compete. And I thought, ironically, that's a lot like what President Biden had been doing with the Inflation Reduction Act. I was out in Georgia for the climate question, looking at how successful that is. But those are exactly the type of policies that President Trump has vowed to get rid of.
Yeah, it's where climate, business, politics, all mashing together at the moment, isn't it? It's literally the kind of front line of everything that's going on. If you don't
Absolutely.
Subscribe already, make sure you subscribe to The Climate Question wherever you get your podcast from. You can search for it online too. Jordan Dunbar in Hungary, thanks so much for your
Thank
time.
Thank you.
You're listening to World Business Report on the BBC World Service.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates. Fly better.
Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo
und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.
And South Africa is continuing to face a serious water shortage, in particular around Johannesburg. Poor management of scarce resources, a failure to fix critical infrastructure have both exacerbated the problems now into what is a pretty much full-blown crisis. Cuts to supply, for example, can last for days and have led to the likes of Anthony Turton, a board member of the South African Water Council, to warn in the Financial Times newspaper recently that the crisis poses what he called an existential threat to the economy. For more, we spoke to Bernadette Zeiler, Chief Executive of the Johannesburg Chamber of Commerce and Industry.
In Johannesburg, we are facing several water challenges, but I'd just like to point out that the Johannesburg Chamber of Commerce and Industry has formed a very strategic and key partnership with the city of Johannesburg, and our Vice President Karen Southerns, we work very closely with the city of Johannesburg where businesses can engage with the city to how we can address the water challenges and work in collaboration and work together where we can really work in partnership to address the water challenges that we currently are facing.
Have you got a sense as to why those challenges are quite so severe this year particularly?
You know, I just think it's build up, you know, the infrastructure's needing maintenance and that's the main reason, you know. And
so does that stem from a lack of funding then, a lack of investment?
And lack of funding and aging infrastructure has really caused this crisis, yeah.
And explain how the crisis is sort of displaying itself, I suppose, in business terms. I mean, are businesses able to open when the water supply is cut off, for example?
Well, it does impact businesses and residents. You find that the big businesses and several businesses have alternative water solutions like water storage. So in the case of having no water, lack of water, they do have the water storage. And so we are looking at alternative solutions while the infrastructure and other challenges are being faced. And as I mentioned before, we do work very closely with the city of Johannesburg, particularly Joburg Water, where our members are able to voice their concerns, their complaints, and Joburg Water will really present solutions and how we can work together. That businesses, you know, because businesses are key to the economy boosting and for the economy to really work. So if our businesses are able to operate and function, then,
But they don't seem to be right now. Yeah. And so for a lot of people listening, opportunity will seem a strange choice of word. For example, Anthony Turton, I'm reading a quote that he gave the Financial Times. He's a board member at the South African Water Council,
yes,
saying that the crisis poses an existential threat to the country's economy, not just to Johannesburg's economy.
Yeah,
this is a disaster, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah, no, look, I've Anthony Turton, I've heard quite a few of his discussions, and nationally it is a big crisis, and the major challenge is aging infrastructure and lack of maintenance. So there's 13 large chambers in all the metro areas. So we formed this association where one of the areas is water, electricity and infrastructure, because we saw these crisis areas. But at present, we're looking how we can be the voice of business, how we can work together and address these challenges. Because, as I say, it is a major challenge and many people, many businesses are being impacted negatively. And it's also important for the private sector to be part of the solution, you know, because big amounts of investment is required to address the challenge positively. So, you know, I do, you know, encourage that private sector also becomes involved in the solution.
That's Bernadette Zeiler there, the chief executive of the Johannesburg Chamber of Commerce and Industry. Well, let's return to Shanti Kellerman, our chief investment officer at M&G Wealth here in London with us. And Shanti, we picked up on kind of a sort of specific, zoomed in on a specific area at the top of the programme. But more broadly, great stat from Bloomberg earlier today, up 2% this week so far. The S&P 500, that's the big stock market, top stock market collection of the stock market listed companies in the United States, poised for its best start for a new president since Ronald Reagan was sworn into power in 1985. Not kind of the real rally that we saw around the Trump election, is there? But still seems to be positive mood right across the board for stocks and shares, at least in the US right now.
I think it's been more what he hasn't done than what he has. And I would say I think it's been a quite benign start. So, you know, we had a flurry of executive orders. The real worry was tariffs. And that hasn't happened. Seems to be sort of threatening, but not doing it. So I think that's driven a lot of that positive sentiment. And if we stay on, you know, go for the more the deregulation angles, those are the things that financial markets will pick on and say, okay, you know, if company costs are lower, we can expect higher profits in the future.
And in terms of that pace, because that's such a really good point, isn't it, that it's been calmer perhaps than people necessarily predicted. Do you think that's to do with some of the picks that we've got in key positions around trade and the Treasury yet to be confirmed entirely, but have had their hearings in the Senate, that these are people who perhaps are more incremental than the president himself?
Perhaps. I think it's much better prepared this time in that he actually has all the people. And I think they focused more on the things they know are going to be pleasing to people than the potential negatives. And so, you know, maybe those negatives will come later on, but, you know, tried to get off to a positive start.
And a very quick thought on a company's news, because just breaking in the last few minutes, we talked about it before Christmas as well, the shortage of Guinness. Guinness could be spun out by its owner Diageo, so says an exclusive in Bloomberg.
Yeah, so Diageo has really struggled with just lower consumption of alcohol. You know, there's generational shifts, but also the, you know, higher inflation. That's, you know, alcohol is something that people can cut. So I think spinning off Diageo, Diageo Guinness, that would bring them some capital in to reinvest in other areas. And it is one of their brands that is doing really well.
Yeah, really interesting, and interesting about trends and what we are and aren't drinking, isn't it, as well? Shanti Kellerman of M&G Wealth, always great to have you on the programme. Thanks so much for your time. Now, being a top-level executive in one field, pretty hard to do it in three, pretty unusual. And that's why our latest chat on the Business Daily Meet section has been so interesting with the originally British businessman Peter Moore, former chief exec at Liverpool Football Club, Sega, Microsoft and Reebok. He sat down with Matt Lyons for Business Daily to tell him about his career.
I think that, you know, by the time I'm moving into video games, I'm 44 years of age, and I've been successful in athletic footwear and apparel. I traveled the world. I was at a senior vice president level at Reebok. And so I think self-belief starts to, I don't want to say creep in, but you have this sense that I can do anything. Now, I'm not going to tell you that those first few months in video games, imposter syndrome was right there. And, you know, there's an expression we use here in Silicon Valley, you fake it till you make it. And it was very much, I'm absorbing this industry, which was brand new to me. The history of it, how we got to where we're at, what Sega's problems were, where online is going, because the Dreamcast was going to be the first ever online console, and the technology behind it all, which was not easy for me because I'd not lived in that world. But if there's one thing I can do, I think, is absorb osmotically a lot of information and then regurgitate that out like any good scouser, as if I've lived it for 20 years. I think back to those days in early 99. We were launching on 9999, the Dreamcast. And you know, leading a full-on press conference in April, I've been in the industry 4.5 months, and leading a full-on press conference and taking questions and having to understand both the legacy of the industry, PlayStation, Sega, Nintendo, all of this stuff I had to absorb. And I think I had the confidence of being able to learn shoes, if you will, and learn how to sell. And you get this, if I can do this, I can do anything type mentality. But it requires a little bit of dedicated focus, and then brushing aside in your head the concept of imposter syndrome, in that I don't belong here, I don't know what I'm talking about, all of that. And yeah, and a little bit of Scouse cockiness, I guess. You add all that into the mix.
Well, if you want to know how to make it to the top of business, not once, not twice, three times, do listen to more of that chat with Peter Moore and his Scouse cockiness, a Scouse, Liverpool, here in the UK, home of the Beatles as well, with Matt Lyons. It's on the Business Daily podcast. You can search for that wherever you get yours from. It's where, of course, you will find the World Business Report podcast too. And we don't ask often, but if you do go and give us a download, give us a five-star review and a little review on there as well, if you can. Thanks so much for listening.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates. Fly better.